from the heart of the Forest City, this is a Craig Needles podcast brought to you by Lexus of London. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
It is the Craig Needles podcast. It is the Friday Roundtable, and I am thrilled to be joined on this. We'll call it a beautiful fall Friday. It's a very nice day outside. I am thrilled to be joined here at the studios at Classic Rock 98.1 by former city councilors, plural, Hollywood Cheryl Miller, Roger Caranti, as well as Steve Holland, the president of CUPE Local 101. Hello, everybody. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks, the whole crowd from City Hall.
Great to be here. I'm as far away as I can be in the studio from Cheryl Miller, but not as far away as I'd like to be from Cheryl Miller. But I'll make the best of it.
I've got new knees, and I can go over there and choke you.
Well, let's go.
Let's see you
Craig
do
and
it.
I are the buffers.
Yeah, let's see you do it.
Well, can we just fight after the podcast?
It's much more fun during your show.
And then when the podcast is over, you two can have a street fight like you always do. But for an audio-based program, it's hard to really convey what's going on.
We do love each other.
I know you love each other. Let's talk about some issues this week, and there's a few things to get to. Let's talk mayor's race first. A couple of things happened in the mayor's race. I want to talk about Khalil Ramal's platform to start, which came out this week. I will note that there was no news release sent to anyone who works here. And I don't think there was a news release sent to any of the outlets in the city. Two of the city's outlets found out that there was going to be a platform release and they sent reporters. But there was no one there from, of the major newsrooms in the city, there are five of them. 60% of them didn't have somebody there. So I don't think that's necessarily a great start. And then there's the details of the platform as well, which I want to get into with the three of you. Your thoughts on what we saw from Khalil Ramal's platform.
I'd like to start off by saying Khalil is actually going for the trifecta. He was an MPP. He ran federally. Now he's running for the mayor. Next step is, I don't know. We don't actually elect our dog catchers. So part of the issue that on his platform, which makes me crazy, like he's jumped into homelessness, addiction, all that. That seems to have taken up a huge amount of air in his platform. And I just want to point out that he was an MPP from 2003 to 2011. At that time, that's when the institutions were shut because the government at that time, Dalton McGuinty's government, closed the institutions and they were going to put in services in the communities. They did one of two things. They closed the institutions. They kicked everybody else to the curb, which we now call addicts, homelessness, window washers, beggars. They have no services. And it's ironic to me that Khalil was part of the government that kicked them to the curb, and now he wants to address the issue locally when it's a provincial issue that has to be addressed with a national plan on homelessness, along with all the provinces buying in. So I find that just ironic that his campaign kicked off with that.
I just find that it's all pie in the sky, throwing it out there, hoping that people are going to jump on it and think that, you know, here's our savior. And I really don't think that what he's offering in any of the stuff that he's thrown there is viable. Especially in the timelines and the frames that he thinks that these can be done. So I think that's the part that makes me is the timelines.
Some of the stuff in there, like, okay, that makes sense. Well, we want to have more spaces for people who are homeless so they can have a place to live. Okay, that makes all the sense in the world. How are you doing that in a month?
Right.
It's simply not happening, Roger.
You know, I'm president of a affordable housing group in London. We have built, I believe, 112 units so far. We're in the process of planning our 180-unit project, which includes affordable housing. The first project took us probably 3 years from the purchase of the land to getting it done. The second project, probably between 3 and 4 years. And this one, by the time it's said and done, from the day that we started planning to the day it'll be finished, will probably be closer to 5 years. Wow. So to get something done in the timelines mentioned is not reality. I think, as Steve said, you know, I'm Italian, so I'll use the term throwing spaghetti against the wall and see what sticks, and that's what this is. You know, I like Mr. Ramal. He's a nice man. Dealt with him before, but I think this is so unrealistic. It just makes no sense at all. as to how you can deal with a problem like that. If we get in a little further on one of the other issues regarding BRT.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a sec.
Okay, so, but this is so unrealistic. I don't know how anybody could think that this is doable and can happen. It can't.
And here's the thing. We could have someone, you know, go for a dig out in front of London City Hall and discover oil, gold, whatever valuable commodity is right below London City Hall. And all of a sudden, there's $1 billion coming into the city of London in December of this year. Even if that was the case and we had $1 billion just of cash out of nowhere to spend on building spaces for people who are homeless, you couldn't accomplish it in a month.
No.
It's not a matter of we don't want to spend the money. It's a matter of it's physically impossible regardless of how many dollars you have. That's the part that I just, when I read that, I'm like, well, there's no way. There's no way.
It's not realistic. And I think, unfortunately, what seems, this kind of is a little bit of a crazy election to me. I'm seeing things happen that I haven't seen in years, like, the document that was given out at Bud Gardens makes absolutely no sense to do that illegally by a third party who is also a campaign manager for a member who's running for city council. So this whole thing is an insult, and I'll tell you what it's done. It's backfired because there isn't anybody who hasn't said, what the hell's going on? And my support's behind Josh. You don't do dirty politics like this in London and survive. And I don't. And it is dirty politics.
Yeah. I just want to
talk about that in a second. I want to get back to the
plan. I just did a rough calculation of what it costs to build a one-bedroom apartment. And we know it fairly well because we've just done it recently. And in the process of doing it again. 6,000 units at approximately $275,000 a unit. That doesn't include the price of land. You're talking from $1.5 billion to $1.65 billion. And the City of London, every project we do, the City of London puts in probably the least from the perspective of the three levels of government.
Mm-hmm. And they have the least money, so fair enough.
Yes. So, to raise that amount of money is huge. You're looking at the other levels of government if you have to go there, and it takes, you have to have a plan.
Yeah.
And it's a process that takes years before you're given the go-ahead on any funding. So, again, the unrealistic aspect of this is huge. There's a big gap in what he's saying and how he can do it. And so it's just not feasible, not doable, and it's something that should be thought of as, it's not a promise. It can't happen.
The total budget of the City of London is $1 billion.
It's $1 billion, yeah.
Yeah, so there you go.
It's not realistic.
That would double the taxes in overnight. Yes. Double, more than that even.
So there's a lot in there that just doesn't link up. And here's my take on why that's the case, is because I think that people within that campaign have likely taken a look around here and have realized that they've got to shoot the moon, essentially, because they're kind of behind the eight ball from a campaign perspective, because, Josh got started first and Josh has, bus ads going around the city and signs and the whole thing. So their thought process is, hey, we're going to try to shoot the moon here, get people with a promise that we may or may not be able to keep, but people will like this promise. And hey, if you could build all those spaces for people who are homeless, I would love that. I would think that was phenomenal. It's not happening in a month.
Craig, there's also the aspect of where you come from. Not to defend Josh Morgan, because I think he doesn't need defending. He's done a good job being on city council. But somebody coming from provincial politics to municipal politics is a sea change in how things are done. Mr. Amal never had the opportunity to be on city council before. It is a steep learning curve. Some would say even more of a steep learning curve than a provincial or federal a seat, because of the fact you're voting the way the party wants you to. Here you actually have to vote the way you want to do. Mm-hmm. So you've got to do the research on it. So for him to put things forward that he has no grasp or concept of, it's extremely difficult. And I think that would go to Josh Morgan for having that experience and plans in place before
that. And here's what I'll say about the mayoral campaign. And Steve, you may feel the same way as I do. I Like right now, there's one campaign that's serious with a real life platform that makes a whole lot of sense. I would love it if, like, 4 years ago, we had four serious campaigns with real life platforms. Yeah. And, well, someone could disagree on the Chang thing as being a real life platform, but whatever. At the very least, like, you may or may not have liked Tanya Park's plan, but it was like a real plan where 1 + 1 = 2. Paul Pilato, same thing. Like, and Holder, of course, winds up becoming the mayor of London. So, why do we get one serious campaign, Steve? I kind of lament that. I don't know how you feel about it.
Well, Josh has come prepared. He's gotten a phenomenal team. The other part that I think we need to look at is where has Khalil really been all these years? He's not been present. He's not, like, not that I've ever seen in any, you know, aspects of the city. Josh has been there through a pandemic. He has supported this city. So you have to give him a lot of credit where credit's due. And Khalil, you know, when he brought his stuff forward, like, to again, you know, point out the problems there, like, when you put stuff out and the grammar and all that is terrible, that just, for me, like, what is your team doing for you? How good is your team? Or how good are you to not catch that stuff? And Craig, you know, when you kind of pointed out to him when he came on and asked him about BRT, and he's like, I'm not really sure. I don't know.
Yes.
For me, like, you are not someone that's coming prepared. You don't know enough. And before you put your name in, you really need to know what the heck's going on.
Let's talk about the bus rapid transit aspect of this, because I look at it and I think it's at the very least the plans that were proposed, the one that would have gone right outside this window past the train tracks that, you know, a couple times a week there's a train stopped on. Council rejected that plan pretty soundly.
Because the $100 million bridge underpass that would have had to be built here. That was a big.
And even then, when the engineers looked at the soil under the building that we are in right now, they said, probably not going to happen unless you want to collapse a few buildings.
Yeah. Well, it started at $50 million and went over $100 million.
And I think it got, some estimates had it well over two eventually. Yeah. And again, here's the problem with those, that people said, council didn't have the will to spend the money. There was also the chance that they could have spent the $200 million and the tunnel was not viable. That was one of the options as well. So if I were a city councilor authorizing spending $200 million, yes or no, and wasn't quite sure whether that money was actually going to buy the city a tunnel, I would probably say no. And that's what council did. I think almost unanimously said, we're not doing the tunnel. And this wasn't even the current council. It was the one before said, the tunnel's out. So to me, the BRT plan, the one that was shot down by this current council, is a no-go. Three out of the five legs got built. And if people want to talk about the west leg, I think that the reasonable people can disagree on the west leg. I think I would have done it for the sewers reason as opposed to the transit reason. Nonetheless, reasonable people could disagree on the west leg, but the north leg, as was mapped out, was never going to work. There was no deal with Western, and that, as far as I know, still doesn't exist.
Right.
So why are we getting back to BRT?
Well, first of all, I'm looking out here on Richmond Street where you're located, and I'm thinking, that goes, and that goes, and that goes, and that goes. Warncliffe is the most viable option for the north leg, and honestly, I cannot for the life of me, when I drive down that street, think, how is this heritage?
That is an inexplicably bad decision.
Horrible. I look at these buildings, there's more heritage here than there is on Warncliffe. Warncliffe is the most viable option, and Western has got to step up to the plate. We've got a new president there, and I'm hoping that there's an opportunity to discuss this, because if they're going to do it, they do it Warncliffe. So you got to be careful, too, when you're voting in this election, that you vote with people who can vote on the North Lake.
Well, the one thing I'll say is I don't think Mr. Ramal realizes that the last election was fought over BRT.
Right.
And those who were elected to make a decision, which they made, to not proceed with the BRT the way it was planned.
Yeah.
So for him to say, I'm going to
build
put BRT through no matter what, and that's going to be... you know what? I think he's just going at the issues that were big issues in the city of London, or are big issues in the city of London, that would maybe get him the most ink in the newspaper, the most radio play, the most time on air on TV. And it's
assuming, of course, he would tell the TV station that it was happening, which he did not do.
Again, it's not something that's viable in the city of London right now. I think over the past 4 years, we've actually heard from very few people who have said they've wanted BRT. And I'll go as far as saying I think BRT, to be quite honest, was pushed more by the administration at City Hall rather than it was by the politicians. There were a few that were very adamant about it, but the majority of people, I don't think, wanted it. Not partly because of the cost, but just because it was something that I think was so different, I don't think they thought it could have worked. So that fight has already been had, and I don't think the vast majority of Londoners want to have that fight again. And Mr. Rumall, I think, is barking up the wrong tree on that one.
I heard him say that as mayor, he will demand. And using that term, you know, you don't demand. Let me tell you, you can hold your breath and cry all you want, but it's never going to happen. That is not a word you use, because city council serves at the leisure of the provincial government. So, like, it's a different role, and I don't think he understands it, even down to the calling the, when he's talking about the policing, calling it LPL, which is London Public Library, and not even using the right terminology about London City Police. So he's got a learning curve, and, like, we can't afford to put somebody in right now that needs a learning curve. They've got to come in, hit the ground running.
Yeah. Well, and I think Roger, you know, pointed out very clearly, he's coming from a different level of government, yeah. and it is very different in how it runs and how it's operated. And, you know, he's got to work with the other 14 people at the table. And I'm not sure, I don't see that working very well. Josh has done it. Josh has been doing it. You know, he was deputy mayor, and I think that he's proven that he can work with this group. And yes, we will have probably a very different group of people at the end of the day, and it'll be a very interesting election. But I think that, you know, Khalil's just thrown everything out there, like Roger said, some pasta against the wall to see what sticks.
You and said pie.
I said pasta. You said pasta. We'll I'll give you yours, or maybe a combination of both.
How about a pasta pie?
Yeah, there you go.
Again, if you want to say we're going to use bus rapid transit as a differentiator issue, or not even bus rapid transit, but the north and west legs of bus rapid transit as a differentiator issue between this is what I stand for and this is what Josh Morgan stands for. Okay, fine. But why wasn't that the case when I asked you about bus rapid transit yeah. when you first got in the race?
Heard it.
Didn't know.
That's the part, like, that, so you didn't know how you, and his response was, well, I know I'm going to work together with my team with a plan. And I'm like, but the question was, do you think council made a mistake? So if I'm asking you about past tense council votes on a couple of different things that anyone paying even cursory attention to City of London politics would have an opinion on, yeah, maybe it's something that you should probably have done a little bit of research on before saying I'm going to run for mayor. So that's just me.
I thought his comment was, I don't want to talk about what happened in the past.
But to me, if you're running, like, because look, let's be honest here. Josh Morgan is the, hey, do you like how things are going in the City of London? If so, vote for me candidate. To me, if you're running against that candidate, you specifically have to talk about the past. Like, that's part of the deal. And that's not what happened here. So I don't know. I think that we're going to look back on this mayor race, regardless, like, Josh Morgan is in all likelihood going to win. We're going to look back on this with a little bit of regret, not so much that Josh Morgan became the mayor of London. I have no idea how that's going to go. But what I will say is we're going to look back on regret that we had a chance to have kind of a more fulsome conversation with the City of London, that we, as far as what kind of city we want, the direction we want, things along those lines, that we just didn't wind up having because there wasn't a serious mayor's race. That's what I think is going to be kind of the marker of this particular race. Speaking of the race for mayor, I want to talk about one thing before we go. And this is something that kind of made its rounds on Twitter. And I have made a news story about it, and I don't think I will. But there was a flyer being handed out to folks in line at Budweiser Gardens last night. And I don't even know who was at Budweiser Gardens performing last night. I don't even know.
Price is Right.
Oh, Price is Right was there. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Flyer being handed out that was saying, hey, don't vote for Josh Morgan to be the mayor of London. Here's why. Okay. No one has to vote for Josh Morgan. That's fine. But the bottom of the flyer had an email address on it, which is an email address that is registered to Anne Marie Velastro, who is a third party advertiser in the City of London. And she is registered for that, and that's fine. It doesn't say her name on the flyer. It just says the email address of the third-party advertiser, which I don't think follows the rules. Plus, regardless of where you're standing, if you're handing out flyers to people who were in line at Budweiser Gardens, that is city property,
right,
and that is against the rules. You're not allowed to campaign there. And Cheryl and Roger, you both worked on many municipal campaigns. You understand the rules are you're not allowed to do that. Just like you're not allowed to put up a campaign sign in the middle of Victoria Park. And there's a good reason for that. So is this something, do you think, the clerk's office should be looking into?
Yeah, well, after what happened with Randy Warren, I think
Randy Warden, I think quite rightly, got a $3,000 fine. Yep. Randy broke the rules, and it was his campaign. And regardless of who was responsible, as far as Amir, Jake, I don't care. But your campaign, you broke the rules. You owe $3,000, Randy, and that's fine.
Exactly. He took responsibility for their actions, which ultimately stopped at him. So, yeah, I think it's illegal to handing those out without having her name in. And Anne-Marie Velasco doesn't like any change in London. She doesn't want residential high rise. She doesn't like music in the bars downtown. I don't know where the hell she's going to live, because we're now UNESCO music capital, and they're going to change the noise bylaws. They're going to do a lot of changing. So I don't know whether she wants to sell and move up. But right now, I think that this woman has broken the law. Again, I'm saying
it. I don't want to say too much about her. I remember when I was on city council and she was she would come and speak, and off the cuff remarks she would make, things that actually made no sense. Mm-hmm. She is who she is. She does what she does. She's actually doing things that she would probably speak against at city council if there was ever any issues to be dealt with. So I'm not a big fan of Ms. Velastro, and I don't think she's one who will make a difference in anything. You know, she did what she did. I don't think it's going to change things. I think it should be pointed out that she's doing things that she shouldn't. But
this is the part that bugs me a little bit, is that this city has gone through some stuff when it comes to campaigning.
Yeah.
Some things illegal, some things not illegal. But we had a big, long talk about that in 2018 and subsequently after 2018 with the Randy Warden stuff, with the stuff going on with Virginia Ridley and Blackridge, which, as far as I know, that civil case is still ongoing. And I think she's got a pretty good civil case.
There were ones that were brought forward.
The Pilato and the Chang one. Chang broke the rules. Pilato didn't.
Yep.
Every time this has been brought to anybody, that is what the people who know the rules and enforce the rules have said. Paul Cheng broke the rules. Paul Pilato didn't. Either way, we've had a lot of conversations about what's okay and not okay from a campaigning perspective. And hey, if this is just one flyer drop at Budweiser Gardens, I don't think anyone's going to get turned up about it. But we've seen a lot of condemnation of what is, or in some cases is not, a legal campaign. I think there should be condemnation of this too. That's all.
Oh, I do. I think that we've got to stop walking away from them. You break the rules, you pay the penalty. I really believe that. Because we end up in a situation that we've been in before, and we don't want
to be there. Especially those that would be first in line to say that somebody broke the rules, and especially Anne-Marie Velastro.
Yeah.
Practice what you preach.
Yeah.
Well, and again, if we don't do something now, you know, as Craig indicated, it's one situation right now, but next thing you know, there's another one, and then another one. And if someone doesn't step in and say, no, these are the rules, you must follow them, and there's consequences for those actions, then there's consequences. And I think that, you know, they need to step up.
Yep. You dance with the devil, you pay the fine.
Yeah. I want to talk about the story over at Pillar before we wrap up here. But first, I do want to mention that the Craig Needles podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Lexus of London. Lifestyle with a drive. You know Lexus is patiently waiting at Lexus of London. Luxury defined. Choose yours today at the award-winning Lexus of London, 1065 Warncliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com. Pillar, the story shifted a little bit this week. Now, I think upwards of 50 people in the Pillar community have signed a letter asking for the board's resignation. I asked members of the Pillar board today and yesterday. I think I've got a hold of four of them so far. Hey, are you going to resign? I got a no comment from Mary Alakakos, got a no comment from Nicole Spreet, and I got a no, I am not resigning from Malvin Wright. There are some other board members who I've left messages for. They haven't got back to me. That's fine. So I don't think the board at this point believes they're going anywhere. But the Pillar board has said, have been told by several people who are in the membership, We need you to resign because of what happened with Mojde Cox. Now Rachel Berdan doesn't work there anymore either. Steve, what do you think happens here at Pillar? How does this sort itself out, do you think?
Well, I think that the board has to step down. You can't have that much turmoil. You know, they've had, you know, Moja's had a lot of, you know, respect from people. Whether, you know, the leadership since then has been good or not, obviously someone stepping away sends a strong message. And what, it's been two, three months maybe. That says something about the organization. And I think that for a long time there's been questions about the organization. So I think that something has to be done, and someone has to, you know, step forward and get the board to realize that, you know, people are unhappy. And you know, again, when you said 40 plus, you know, who knows what the end number is going to be with regards to those numbers. I think it really speaks volumes as to people's unhappiness and resentment over what's been happening.
Yeah, it's messy. And I just look at an organization like Pillar and think to myself, I don't know if the organization is going to survive this, because you've got people sort of that are big deals within the organization turning on each other. It's been nasty. It's been ugly. I just think that it's going to it's just not good for the long term health of the organization. We'll see what occurs, but geez, does it look bad right now?
Do we know why the people were let go?
No. Mojde Cox, officially, from Pillar, they just said that there was a change at the president and CEO position. Mojde Cox said that she was removed from that position. Several sources at Pillar have told London News Today and told me that she was walked out of the building by members of the board. Like, they've like basically got her out to the sidewalk before they said, okay, you can go, or like, we're gonna, like, you know, take eyes off you. So that part's pretty ugly. As far as the Rachel Berdan situation, I don't know. And I don't really know Rachel at all, but I have a lot of people telling me that she was considered a pretty big part of the Pillar organization. For her to say, hey, I don't want to be there anymore, and for them to lose someone who they had in the leadership role for the second time in less than 2 months, that is a pretty massive red flag. So we still don't know.
No. They were let go.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So now Rachel, as far as we know, wasn't let go. It was a mutual decision to part ways, or whatever it happens
to
be.
So I'm not going to prejudge
right
what the group did.
Right.
Maybe how they did it was maybe a little insensitive. Having said that, when it comes to situations like that, when it's employee relations, and Steve, mm-hmm. you know this better than I do, and I'm not the biggest fan of Pillar. I'm not the biggest person who knows exactly what they do over the years, but I'll say this. If they were to say why she was let go, there would be a huge lawsuit.
Yes.
So I think they're doing what's responsible on their part in not saying anything. If she would like to say why she was let go and the reason they gave her, she's able and open to do that. So, again, I'm not going to prejudge the leadership there and why they did this, but there's always two sides to a story. Until I hear both sides, I'm not going to make any type of decision as to why it was done. I remember when we were at City Hall and we had to part with some people at times, you know, the worst thing you could do is talk about it, because the fact you leave the city open to all sorts of legal implications, and legal implications means you're writing a big check to somebody, and people hate that. So until I know, I'm going to keep my thoughts to the fact that this is a personnel issue. And
yeah, but unfortunately, when the board turtles, you know.
Yeah, but they can't say anything.
No, I understand that, Roger, and I'm not talking about that. What I'm talking about is that 40 members, ship organizations have sent letters to the board asking them to resign, which I think is unfortunate, because the board resigning isn't going to be the answer. What's happening is the organization is obviously in turmoil, and they need a settling or something, because who knows, as I said, I don't know what they do either. But asking the board to resign is not the answer. Asking the board to tell the member organizations what the plan is to move forward, or are they going to dismantle the organization? I think the membership have that right.
Yeah, and that's you're 100% right. But
thank
again,
you.
The 40 groups that I guess have signed the document have likely been told one side of the story, and they're not privileged to hearing the other mm-hmm. side.
But it sounds to me the organization's in flux. As a member,
turmoil.
I want always. As a member, tell me what you're going to do here. I don't know if it's a paid membership fee. They're owed, not about leaving or anything, about what is the board going to do with this organization.
Like you said, they need some stability right now. They're in a time of, you know, crisis, really.
If they've got about as much stability as a three-legged table.
That's
absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. And they don't have anyone running
the
ship.
That is the most stable. That is the most stable table, a three-legged table. If it's square, if it's round, it's the most stable.
Huh?
Yeah, he's...
Square three-legged table, then.
Yeah. that's a milk stool when it has three legs.
Last thing before we wrap up. Yeah, milk stool is different. Last thing before we wrap up. It is homecoming weekend. Not FOCO, but it's real life homecoming weekend. Has Western done enough? Has the City of London done enough to ensure that it is not some sort of ridiculous, crazy party weekend, which it has been in years past? Or is there, and this has been my take, there just isn't a lot they can do. That's it. There just isn't a lot they can do, and we're just going to have to live with the fact that Western students and Fanshawe students inject millions and millions of dollars into the City of London's economy, and yeah, sometimes there might be a party on St. Patrick's Day, or sometimes there might be a party on homecoming weekend that's a little bit loud, and we're going to have to live with that. If people start, you know, damaging each other, that's a different conversation, but do you think that the City of London's done enough in order to ensure a safe weekend as we have homecoming this weekend, Roger?
Unless the city has a way to change the weather. There's really...
We should invest in a weather machine.
That's the only way that you see things change when it comes to homecoming. And that's why Western, you know, change a date to late in October, because they would hope that the weather would be colder and rainier and nothing would happen. Homecoming is going to happen. Issues are going to happen. I found it funny last night. I think I was watching the local TV news, and there were people... they were talking to some students, and they were sitting on a couch on the roof of their house. That's illegal to do. I remember when we were on council, Mr. Katolik made sure that was not going to happen again. But how do you patrol that? I think the police do the best job they can. I'll say this, that I think the police are understaffed in being able to do a lot of things like this. You can only baby people so much. I don't think there's anything you can do other than ban it outright and fine everybody for taking part in having fun, and that's not going to happen.
No.
So, you have to do the best you can to keep it under control. And, I think the counselor for the area in the past, Phil Squire, did his best to help out in making sure that things were good. I know he visited
Miriam
the
said
area.
She's going to be there.
Yeah, I'm sure
she'll
she will.
Same.
So,
yeah.
Again, I don't think you can do anything other than try to keep it under control and do your best at doing that. And, you know, parents, tell your kids not to be stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, what else can you do?
Yeah.
We all tell our kids not to be stupid. And the irony of it is, I know that I was stupid. So telling my kids
not
you.
First time hearing of this.
Come on,
of
Cheryl.
Of course I did awful things.
You were in a convent, weren't you?
I would explain
probably because I was drunk.
Yeah.
No, I was not in a convent.
Illegally, that's right.
This whole thing is like water in a balloon. It doesn't matter how you hold it. It's going to flop and flop. It is what it is. The police, they've got together, they got a plan, and they'll figure it out with the community. And there's not much else we can do. You're right, brings a whole bunch of money in. It also brings in a great sense of pride. It brings in people who come back year after year to celebrate being at Western. So, yeah, it is what it is, and it's unfortunate, but that's the way it is.
Yeah.
Maybe start the school year in January and end it in December so that it's really cold. But otherwise, I think the city
Steve,
and
you might
police
be onto
are,
something.
It's possible.
You know what they should do is have everybody wear shorts.
All year
in
long.
January.
I would
December,
be all January. For it. Yes. I would actually attend
you,
that party.
We're going to have you partying on FOCO, I was just going to say. Or homecoming or whatever happens to be. I will say that the idea of moving it to the end of October, and this is one of my takes that has aged the best over the years. As soon as they said, oh yeah, we're just going to do it in October, I said, There's going to be a bunch of people who plan a party. It's going to happen that same weekend anyway. Yeah. Yep. And it's going to be even more out of control than anything that happened on regular homecoming. And geez, did that take ever age well. We got to wrap up this podcast. So thank you very much to Cheryl and Steve and Roger for doing the Craig Needles podcast with us. Of course, it is brought to you by Lexus of London. Lifestyle with the drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting at Lexus of London. Luxury defined. You can find yours at 1065 Warncliffe Road South, the award-winning Lexus of London. And you can find them online at lexusoflondon.com. You can find this podcast at classicrock981.com and londonnewstoday.ca. Have a phenomenal weekend. We'll talk to you next week on the Craig Needles Podcast.
The Craig Needles Podcast is a presentation of the Blackburn Media Podcast Network.